Now, the next time you're stuck in traffic heading to an Australian airport, paying expensive airport fees, even if you park for 10 minutes, or listening to a taxi driver complain about how much they're slugged, well, look, relax a teeny bit, because there's now a powerful new alliance thinking of you. Qantas, Rex Airlines and Air New Zealand are some of the airlines in this new group called Airlines for Australia and New Zealand. It's issued its first volley in the policy debates that affect Australian travellers generally, saying, for instance, there has to be a rail link from the newest being planned, that at Badgerys Creek, to Sydney CBD. Yes, at present there are no plans for a rail line for that new airport, despite the years of planning. High fees at our very profitable airports are also in the firing line of this new group. Graham Samuel, the former head of the ACCC, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, is now the chair of Airlines for Australia and New Zealand. Good morning, Graham.
Morning, Geraldine. Great to talk to you again.
Yes, it does sound like you've taken on, in a sense, an extension of your former role, because the ACCC has been looking at airport costs and performance and found this year that privatisation had led to everyone paying more.
Well, it's an extension of the role in two respects, Geraldine, because as you acknowledged earlier, the ACCC and my role in it was always to be looking after consumers. And while this is the major airlines, and you mentioned three, Virgin is also part of the exercise, it's not airlines versus airports. It's in fact the airlines representing their customers, which are consumers, dealing with the airports. Now,
yes, you are an industry group, aren't you?
No question.
You're a lobby group.
Lobby group. It's more an industry group that is trying to deal with the fact that since privatisation, the airlines are, and this is a statement of fact, it's not a claim, the airlines are monopolists. And monopolies, as I often used to say when I was chair of the ACCC, have a great tendency to do three or four things: charge high prices, be somewhat complacent about the service that they provide, and sometimes to gold plate their infrastructure, their assets, because they know that the users, in this case the airlines and the consumers, have got no choice. It's not a take it or leave it issue, because they can't leave it. They have to take it and they have to accept it. So let's just quickly look at what happens when you take a train out to the airport in Sydney. Built into your train fare, if you stop at the domestic or international terminals, is a big slug for a charge payable to the airports on top of the normal fare.
That's why it costs so much.
Well, see, you don't know about it.
I didn't know that.
If you get off at one of the neighbouring stations, Mascot or St James, whatever, the fare is much less than once you get to the airport and the airport terminal. That's where the fare suddenly lifts because of the slug. Taxis. Every taxi ride you take from an airport costs you an additional about $3.60, because that's a charge made. And I'm assuming the same thing is done with Uber. When you walk into the airport, the charges for retail goods, a bottle of water and the like, are high. Why? Because the retailers have to pay a high rental charge. And then there's the charge you don't know about. And that's the charge that the airlines have to pay for landing at the airports. It's the aeronautical charge. And it has to be passed on, obviously, to consumers, because it's part of the costs of running an airline. So there's all those things that are happening. The ACCC, since privatisation took place at the turn of the century, has had a role to monitor both the prices and the quality of service of the airports. And year after year, and of course I was involved in it for 8 years, the opinion of the ACCC has been the prices are too high and the profitability of the airports is very, very high. If you do an international comparison, the Australian airports in particular some of those in New Zealand, because New Zealand is part of this process, are very, very high in international standards. And the quality of service is at best good or fair. It's improved in some cases, but it's not at that very good or excellent position that you'd expect for the charges that are being paid.
Compared with what? I mean, what's the standout? Places like Changi in Singapore, I suppose?
I mean, for those that are fortunate enough to go to some of those airports and you see what is offered there and the standard of service, then you start to see a real appreciation of the difference between the Australian airports and those that are offered to us on an international basis. Now, that's not to say all the airports in Australia are poor. In the last report, they all received a tick of good. That wasn't very good or anything else, but it was a tick of good. And Brisbane Airport, interestingly, has consistently, through my time at the ACCC, shown a bit more than a tick, a fairly solid tick, as being one of the best airports in terms of quality of service. Some might say that has a bit to do with the fact that there's some competition from the Gold Coast and, of course, from the Sunshine Coast. And that's the big C that's missing in relation to airports, it's competition.
So that you do see it as very much a product of monopoly behaviour, do you?
I think there's no question the monopoly behaviour and the fact that they are monopolists, and there is that fact, except for a mild element of it in respect of Brisbane, means that, as I say, monopolists' general attitude is take it or leave it, but we know you, the airlines, cannot leave it because you have to land here. And the consumer has to use that airport because there's no other way of moving quickly from one location in Australia to the other.
So, well, what can be done then if it is, like, how long are these contracts locked in then? I'm wondering, in a sense, what you can achieve why would the airlines bother to set this up if they didn't think there was something that could be shifted?
Well, I think, first of all, we've got to remember that the participants in this combination, which is Rex, as you've said, Qantas, Air New Zealand, because we're dealing Trans-Tasman, and Virgin, occupy about 80% of the capacity of the airports, the major airports in Australia. If you go to the regional airports, and there are many of those, then the occupancy of those or the use of those is close to 100% or in some cases 100%. So there's a lot of power now in this combined group to be able to deal with government, to be able to deal with the airports and to, in particular, put out the public message that there is an issue that needs to be dealt with. So, Geraldine, I used to be a bit bewildered, if not bemused, but when we issued our annual monitoring report of airports, the only thing that was focused upon by the media was car parking charges. And yet there are so many other charges. I mentioned the taxi charges, the charges for retail rental, which reflect in the price you pay. And in particular, the one that really the airlines are irritable about, more than irritable, very concerned about, is the aeronautical charges that are imposed on them. There's another very interesting
element. Tell us more about those, please.
Well, those aeronautical charges are charges that the airports impose on the airlines for landing at the airports. Now, it's totally appropriate that airlines have to pay for landing at airports. I mean, that's the use of the service. But the size of the charges is something that is always the subject of vigorous debate and negotiation. But, of course, the negotiation can be really tough when you're dealing with an airport that says, you have no choice. You have to land here. You can't not land at Sydney Airport, or you can't not land at Brisbane Airport. So take it or leave it, but you can't leave it, so you've got to take it.
Now, I think there is also a proposal to introduce regulations forcing airlines to compensate travellers, isn't there, for flight delays and cancellations. Now, that is something I think the consumer would welcome. What's your position on this?
I think we have to be cautious because flight delays are very often not the cause or not the result of actions by the airlines. Very often it'll be action of air control, it'll be weather, it'll be closure of certain runways. For those of us, for example, fly to Melbourne, it is customary for the pilot to be saying about 20 minutes out from Melbourne, we've been given the go slow order. That go slow comes from air traffic control, and whether airlines ought to be asked to pay for that is a really questionable issue. I don't think any customer would say, well, that's the airline's fault. That's an issue of both weather, as I say, closure sometimes of runways because of weather issues and air traffic control, which of course leads to the next issue, which is that airports are saying, well, maybe we're capacity constrained, maybe there's not enough runways there, we should build some new runways. But I'll tell you, Geraldine, I have been bewildered, absolutely bewildered for years at the fact that when airports say, we're going to build a new runway, airlines start paying for the runway at the time that we start designing it, not when it's finished. And I couldn't believe this.
So this goes to infrastructure, doesn't it, really?
Well, it does. And I was debating this the other day with the chief executive of the Australian Airports Association at a conference in Sydney. And I said, why ever would you contemplate that someone would pay for something they can't use? because it hasn't been built. It could be 3, 4, 5 years until it's built. It does strike me as very strange indeed. Look, any property developer will tell you that when they develop, say, a supermarket for a supermarket chain, there's no supermarket that's ever going to say, oh, look, we'll start paying for that supermarket when you start digging the foundations. They'll say, we'll pay for it once you can give me the key and I can enter in there and put my shelving in and start welcoming customers into the supermarket. And yet the airports have for years said, when we start developing a runway or major infrastructure, from the time that the architect puts pen to paper to look at the way that the thing might be designed, and then when the first sod of oil is turned, that's when you start paying for it. That seems to me to be quite bewildering, and it is a financing technique that I don't quite understand.
So you would like, am I right here, apart from clearly trying to develop a different relationship with government and with the airlines, the monopolist airport operators themselves, you're hoping the public somehow comes in as a proxy support for the airlines, are you? Is that a reasonable way of thinking about it?
I think that's right, because the public will be intimately involved in this. The public knows that if the airlines can be successful in these sorts of dealings, one way or another, they will get better service, they'll get lower prices, that the sorts of things that they currently are paying for, some of which they don't even know about, will start to become a bit more transparent, and they'll start to take note of the various issues that the ACCC year after year put into its monitoring report in several hundred pages of very well-researched activity, and to start to say that is not right. Now, in addition, we've got a Productivity Commission review, which is coming up next year, which is to look at the whole question of how airports should be regulated. They are monopolists. That's a statement of fact. Should there be some form of regulation or a threat of regulation that might perhaps keep some of these charges in order?
By the way, if there is a separate air owner for Badgerys Creek, and of course the Sydney airports have said they're not going to apply for it, might that introduce the very competition you're describing?
It might, but for Badgerys Creek to be competitive, you've got to have essential infrastructure to enable people to get there. I think it's about 56 kilometres from the centre of Sydney, so you've got to be able to get there. Now, let me emphasise, by the way, we haven't taken a position on whether a rail link is required or not. I think a journalist actually indicated that was one of the options that was there. But the important thing is that if Badgerys Creek is to be in any way competitive, you've got to have a means of getting there. The experience has been demonstrated in Melbourne with Avalon Airport. Mm. Yeah, and Avalon Airport is not that easy to get to, and that's not the blame of Avalon. That's not the fault of Avalon. I mean, they are providing airport services there, but airlines won't land there unless they've got the passengers that appear to go out to Avalon to use that airport. So that just sort of indicates some of the issues you have when you want competition between airports in the same city. London, I think, has demonstrated how competition can have a real impact on the charges and on the quality of service with the various airports that surround the City of London. And that's the sort of, and of course, the means of getting to those airports can make competition the overall discipline.
Interesting.
You will not be surprised to hear that I think the competition and consumer empowerment is the most important discipline that can ever be imposed on businesses.
Graham, good to hear you again. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Graham Samuel, making the best of 15 minutes. I'm Geraldine Doogue. I do hope you can join me at the same time next week or online via the RN website.